Thanks for joining us and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 a.m. at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. You can also stream our services online on Facebook, our website, our YouTube channel, and our church app. We invite you to check out our website at GoStonebridge.com and give us a like on Facebook at Facebook.com/GoStonebridge. This week, Pastor Steve Bradley kicks off our brand new series, Daniel, New City, Same Hope. Now here's Pastor Steve.
All right, good morning. How many people had a hard time getting up this morning? You know, it's tough when they do the spring forward thing, right? This is a funny one. I didn't do this for the other services. So on Saturdays, sometimes I try to plan ahead of time. Not just for me, but for everything else that's going on. So a couple of years ago, I decided I'm going to go reset all of the clocks in the church on Saturday before, you know, the Sunday, the spring forward Sunday. But I don't know why it is. It's just me. But for some reason, spring forward translates into we get an extra hour of sleep. Wouldn't that be better? See, I think we should keep gaining the whole time. You know, it just should never go the other way. And so I set every clock in the church before I left on a Saturday evening the wrong direction. So as everyone came in, you know, it was 2 hours off. It wasn't just 1 hour off. So I had this morning, my alarm clock in the morning is some birds that come by my bedroom window. And about 5:30 or 6 in the morning, they sing for about 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. And yeah, I know, but if you're a preacher, God does that for you. So just, you know, I'm sorry that y'all don't get that. But they do this. And the good thing is I'm the only one that can hear them, too. So, you know, I'm just kidding. Joni always says, I didn't hear any birds, but I do. And they wake me up in the morning. And I thought, this is going to really mess them up. Because they're going to come, and it's going to be an hour too late. I need to get up an hour earlier than that. So kid you not, you know, normally 5:30 or 6 in the morning, so it would have been 4:30 to 5 in the morning. And sure enough, they came at 4:30 to 5 in the morning and sang. I'm serious as I can be. It really did happen. It's probably a recording, but they were there and woke me up. We're taking a look at, in the book of Daniel, I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to jump backwards. We were all the way up with Daniel and the lion's den in chapter 6, but I'm going back to chapter number 3, so I'm taking a kind of a half step back because there's this great story in chapter 3. In fact, for me, it's one of the just one of the most powerful ones in the Old Testament as far as just kind of how it encourages you and changes your view on things. And it's the story of these three guys named Shadrach, Meshach, and... Yeah, so you've heard of them before. These are their Babylonian names. Does anybody know their Hebrew names? Their Hebrew names were Hananiah, Mishael, and... Yeah, okay, we just two's fine, right? So, it's all right, but you can look them up. They had Hebrew names also, but they're known for their Babylonian names, and they're known for this ordeal with the fiery furnace. But most people don't really catch the story or the significance, just how powerful the story is. And let me tell you what, as far as a modern application, this is what it deals with. How do you get over your struggles in life? How do you get past the trials, the difficulties, the troubles, you know, that you face in life? And many times the things that you look at your life and you say, really, this has got me trapped. I can't get free. You know, it's like I'm sort of bound up by this and there's no escape from this. In fact, this is one of the things parents will come to me and they'll talk about, you know, my kid was such an angel, you know, and such a little, you know, girl or a little guy that, you know, loved God and all too. And now they've gotten older, you know, what happened? Where did they? Well, you go through trials and struggles and difficulties in life. You know, that's the way it works. And if you're at that age where you're going through that and you're questioning also, that is the way it works. You will face things that you haven't faced before. And then there's this weird thing in the Bible, Old Testament and New Testament, where it talks about rejoicing or, you know, feeling happy or joyous about the troubles and the struggles and the trials that you go through. You might think that's weird because it's not the way we think. The way we think is, well, here's how I'm going to get through my struggles or my troubles. God, give me, right? Give me, you know, give me this award. God, I'll get over my struggle. Give me, you know, another check. Give me, you know, more money. God, I'll get over my struggles. Give me another accomplishment. You know, if you, I dealt with singles for a long time. And one of the things that when you're single, I don't know, I felt the same thing. God, I'll get over all my struggles and my trials. If you just give me the right person, right? You know, that then all my struggles and trials and difficulties will, you know, will be over. Because all I need, God, is for you to bless me. Just give me the things that I need, and then I'll get over all my struggles and my trials, my problems, the things that hold me back. Those things will go away. And this is what you find out as you go through life. It doesn't work that way. It may temporarily kind of make you feel better, or you know, you'll forget about your troubles for a little bit. But actually, not only does it not get you over them, sometimes what happens is it brings new ones. And you're like, wait a minute, this is not supposed to work that way. And that's because as people, that's how we think it works. That's how we figure it out. You rarely hear someone say, God has blessed me by sending me this really difficult trial. Anybody? Or God has blessed me because I went through a really hard circumstance, you know. But actually, when you read in the Bible, you see that many times it's through those things that God actually took people past their troubles and their struggles and took away the things that held them or caught them. In fact, you may be here today and say, man, there's just something that's just bound me, and I can't get free. There's nothing I can do. God, and you're looking for something, but the truth is you might be looking for the wrong thing. And then when God sends actually the answer for you or puts you in the right place, the right circumstances to free you, you might actually be running away from the thing that God wants to use to set you free. That's because He's God. And God has always been the one who does things backwards from the way we would think He would do them. It's not the way we would do it. That's why it's a trust relationship between us and God. So let me get you to jump in with me. This is Daniel chapter number 3. And if you have a Bible, you want to look there. If you want to look at your outline, it'll also pop up on the screen. There's a lot of verses in here. It's all right. I read fast. This is what it says. Verse number 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made a gold statue 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide and set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. So King Nebuchadnezzar is the king of Babylon. If you went back to the beginning of Daniel, he's the one that had conquered Jerusalem and taken them off as teenagers. They've all grown up now. And in the previous chapter, this is actually where Daniel tells him a dream that he had and interprets it. And the dream is this giant statue that has a gold head, silver shoulders, a bronze hip and thigh area, iron legs, and then the toes on the feet are made out of iron and clay. And it's a picture, it's kind of a pointing to the future of these nations that are secular, that will rule over and lead until, and in the dream he talks about a stone that is cut out, or comes out of the mountain, but not cut by man. It crushes the feet and destroys the statue and builds a kingdom that will last forever. And it's a picture of Jesus coming. After the Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar, the head of gold, the shoulders and chest of silver is the Medo-Persian Empire with Darius and Cyrus. Then the Greeks take over. Remember Alexander the Great, the thighs and the hips of iron, of bronze, and the legs of iron is the Roman Empire. And, of course, its feet of iron and clay, which don't mix and make the statue absolutely vulnerable with Jesus Christ coming and establishing His kingdom. So this is his dream. This is interpretation. He praises Daniel for it. And so it makes sense that in Nebuchadnezzar's mind, Nebuchadnezzar is the head of gold. And since I'm the head of gold, I'm going to set up something that all people can see and worship, because Nebuchadnezzar was, of course, you know, very full of himself, and a very powerful and many times a very cruel leader. And so the plain of Dura is not in Babylon. This is outside the city of Babylon. And that's all right. You can laugh at that. But, you know, okay. Outside of Babylon. And there in this desert area, he sets up some sort of image or thing to set up. It, in the language, it could be an image of a person, but it also could be a stylus that they would set up, that the Egyptians set up, and you know, be tall, and he would carve on it his accomplishments and all. But like the Egyptians, they would make it so that you could see it for tens of miles away. That's why they put it in the desert. So he sets this up, and it says in verse 2, then he sent messengers to the high officers, the officials, the governors, the advisors, the treasurers, the judges, and all the provincial leaders to come to the dedication of the statue he'd set up. So all these officials came, and they stood before the statue King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then, verse 4, a herald shouted. Here's the herald proclaiming, people of all races and nations and languages, listen to the king's command. When you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipes, and other musical instruments, bow to the ground to worship King Nebuchadnezzar's gold statue. And then here's the other side of it. Anyone who refuses to obey will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. So not only is this set up in this great place, this entourage is brought in, but there's also this huge furnace that is set up. It would have had, more than likely, had some sort of side doors opening to it that to be able to clean it out. And at the top, it would have had some sort of opening to throw fuel in and for the smoke to come out. So it's this giant furnace set up as a threat to make sure that you understand you will do what Nebuchadnezzar says. You will bow before him and you will worship the image that he has set up, the gods as he sets them up, because he is Nebuchadnezzar and no one dares go against Nebuchadnezzar. So he set it up this way, and then it says in the next verse, verse 7, so at the sound of the musical instruments, all the people, whatever their race or nation or language, bow to the ground and worship the gold statue that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Verse number 8, but some of the astrologers, in other translations it will say the Chaldeans, it's just a description of who they are as astrologers, went to the king and informed the Jews. They said, and jump to verse 12 because he just goes through same stuff that was here. Jump down in verse 12. But there were some Jews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, whom you have put in charge of the province of Babylon. They pay no attention to you, your majesty. They refuse to serve your gods, and they do not worship the gold statue that you have set up. So here's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're facing circumstances that they cannot control. You ever face those? So the only thing that they can control, the only thing they can decide is how they will respond, what their response is. They can't control this. And I know that sometimes you think, God, why did you lead me to things like this? I can't control these things. Yeah, but you still have a choice to make. You can choose how you will respond. And they've got to decide what they will do. It's another one of those non-negotiables for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, like Daniel faced. We talked about it last week, where they had decided, listen, they work for the king, they serve him. They'd been set up to lead and rule over the province of Babylon. That was where they worked for the king. But they served, they viewed it as they served Jehovah. They served the living God. They served the king, they served him, but they served him over Nebuchadnezzar. And so they would not bow, they were not going to bow before the king, you know, and before the things that he set up. So there's this point in their life. It's a point of tension, and it's a point of conflict for them. There's a reason for it. God has brought them to this place in their life so that God is their rescuer, so that they see God differently. And the reason I say that is because I know you might look at your own life and say, God, why did you bring me to this? Why am I facing this difficulty, this trial? Why? You're bound by something. Something's got you. You can't control it. You can't seem to overcome it. And then you say, God, then why did, you know, I'm already struggling with that. Why did you bring me to this? And so many times, God will bring you to something like this because he's going to use this to set you free. And you say, I don't understand that. That doesn't make sense to me. I know. That's why this story is so powerful. Because God uses so many times what we don't understand and what we don't see as a positive or as something he could say. He uses it because of who he is to help set us free. You know, when I think of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in this situation, you know, I just think, hey, their friends have got to be telling them, hey, just bow down to the statue. This is how to solve this real quickly. Just bow down. It's okay. You know, you don't have to even mean it. Just do it. But for them, it was too deeply ingrained for them. I don't know if you know this, but the early Christians in the Roman Empire for the first 300 years, they faced at times situations where the Roman emperors would say, you bow down, you worship our gods, you do it our way, or, you know, you get thrown into the lions, you know, with the lions in. Sounds like Daniel, right? Or you know, at times, you know, some of them would put them on stakes in their gardens and coat them with tar and set them ablaze if you don't do what I tell you to do. And it's cruel. And their friends would say the same thing. Just bow down, you know. You don't have to mean it. Just pretend. And it's okay. But many of them would do this. They would say, okay, but if I do that, how can I face God? How am I going to face God and say, God, I believe you, I trust you? Well, in most things, but this was too big, you know. This was too dangerous. You know, God can't overcome a Roman emperor. God can't overcome, you know, the king of all Babylon, you know. And you're going to hear in your life, hey, listen, how's your God going to fix this? And the problem is, if you think you're going to tell God how to fix it or someone else is going to tell God how to fix it, you'll miss it. Jesus was even accused of the same thing. Hey, if you're God, just come down off the cross. Just wipe out the Romans, you know. But Jesus had an entirely different idea, and there was a different plan to what victory was going to look like. And listen, you and I are all recipients of that because of what he did. It's not how they would have picked it. You know, it's not how Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego would have necessarily picked it. But they just had to trust God. And so this is what it says in verse 13. It says, and Nebuchadnezzar flew into a rage. See, there's a change in focus for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And soon there's going to be a change in focus even for Nebuchadnezzar. As they begin to look at not just themselves, they begin to look to God in this situation. He flew into a rage. He ordered Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to be brought before him. When they were brought in, Nebuchadnezzar said to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you refuse to serve my gods and to worship the gold statue I have set up? I will give you one more chance to bow down and worship the statue I've made when you hear the sound of the musical instruments. But if you refuse, here's his challenge, you know, same challenge we face sometimes. But if you refuse, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. And then he says this, and then what God will be able to rescue you from my power? See, again, to them, it wasn't about them all of a sudden. Now it became about Nebuchadnezzar and him challenging God. And it's real clear in the language, isn't it? It reminds me of David. You remember the story of David and Goliath? And in the story of David and Goliath, you know, the Israelite army and the Philistine army are on either side of a plain. And they're taunting one another. And then the Philistines sent out their champion, you know, this giant, powerful, strong, bigger than any other warrior named who? Yeah, Goliath. And Goliath comes out and he taunts them. But he not only taunts Israel, he taunts the God of Israel. He challenges the God. He's basically saying the same thing. What God can rescue you from me? And no one would walk out and meet him and challenge him because they were afraid of him. He was powerful. And then little shepherd boy David shows up bringing food. His father sends him, says, take this to your brothers who are soldiers in the army. He takes them and he's like, what are y'all doing? Go out there and get him. That's David. And David, and when you look at it, it's a great story. Read the story. This is what you'll find. David sees it differently. David looks at it, and David sees it this way. He says, it's not about you guys and the Philistines. It's about Goliath challenging God. He can't win. He can't stand before God. And they're like, you little brat, go back home. You know, were you coming out here to make it worse for us and to shame us more? And David's like, no, I'm just telling you, how is he going to stand before God? See, David sees it differently. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego see it different than Nebuchadnezzar sees it. I was listening to, y'all know who John Maxwell is? John Maxwell is does a lot of leadership stuff. He is he's a former pastor for a long time. When the birds used to come sing outside him, they don't do that anymore. Because he's a leadership guy, and he may still have that. And one of the things he does, not only in Christian circles, he does it in secular circles also, is he teaches on leadership. And his conference, one of the things he says is there's one thing that successful people do differently than everyone else. And if you want to meet me afterwards, you know, I'll tell you what it is. But anyway, he said, no, okay, I wouldn't do that to you. So here's what he says, and he's absolutely right. He says successful people think differently than people who are not successful. It's true. It's a change in the way you see things, how you understand things, how you think. That's the same with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're not looking at it the way everyone else looks at it. It's not about them. To them, it's about God, and Nebuchadnezzar is challenging God in this situation. Absolutely, it helps to understand these next verses. And look at verse number 16. In fact, this will make a lot more sense to you. It says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied. Here's their reply to the king. Listen, this makes sense. O Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to defend ourselves before you. Why would they say that? Because it's not about them. See, he's making it about them. They said, it's not about us. You're challenging God himself. He said, if we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is what? He's able. We may not be able. We may not be able to figure it out. We don't even know what to ask for necessarily, but he's able to save us. He will rescue us from your power, your majesty. And then my favorite part, because I think this is the part, the next verse 18, where they really, really show how they have shifted their thinking, where their focus is. They say in verse 18, they say, but even if he does not, we want to make it clear to you, your majesty, great respect, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue that you have set up. Wow. I mean, there's such humility and yet such a nobility in what they say because of how they view and how they understand God. And how they understand it is it's not for us to figure out. In fact, if we try to figure it out, we'll mess it up because we'll tell God how we want it. And the truth is what we really want is how God wants it. And it's not really about how we want it anyway. It's really about God himself and what God wants to do. And we really serve him. We serve Nebuchadnezzar. We serve Babylon. You know, that's where God has placed them. But they do that because they serve God. And they've got that part right. They've got that part figured out. This is in the story is a huge turning point for them because they have decided that this is really all about God, and so they're going to take the situation, you know, visibly and say we're really taking this and turning this over to God because it's really about him, not about us, and we just serve him, and so God will choose how he decides to deal with us, but we will still not serve your gods or we serve him. You know, they're good at what they did for Nebuchadnezzar, but their ultimate loyalty, it still rested with God. And so this is what it says in verse 19. This makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So furious that his face became distorted with rage. You ever seen that before? Somebody, you're like, it's a different person. You know, look at that. He was so angry with them that they would dare to challenge him in this way. And it says he commanded that the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than usual. In other words, just pile on the wood or coal or whatever they were fueling, just pile it on. I want this furnace hotter than it's ever been before. Then verse 20, then he ordered some of the strongest men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to throw them into the blazing furnace. So they tied them up and they threw them into the furnace, fully dressed in their pants, their turbans, their robes, and their other garments. This is noteworthy because normally, apparently, the practice would have been to take their clothing away from them, you know, before they are executed in this way, because back for them, clothing was incredibly valuable. You just didn't, you know, burn those things. But in this case, Nebuchadnezzar is so mad. He is so furious. He wants them in the furnace and everything associated. Just go ahead and throw them in fully clothed. And it says, and because the king in his anger had demanded such a hot fire in the furnace, the flames killed the soldiers as they threw the three men in. So apparently, as they throw them in the top of this furnace through the opening, the flames and the heat are so enormous that these guys are incinerated. They're killed in doing that. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, securely tied, fell into the roaring flames. But look at verse 24. But suddenly, Nebuchadnezzar jumped up in amazement. He exclaimed to his advisors, "Didn't we tie up three men and throw them into the furnace?" "Yes, your majesty, we certainly did," they replied. "Look," Nebuchadnezzar says, "I see four men unbound, walking around in the fire unharmed." And he says this, "And the fourth looks like a god." Didn't we throw three in there? Didn't we bind them up? Didn't they take ropes and just, you know, tie them totally up so they had to carry them and throw them in? And now look in the flames. Wouldn't this have been an incredible picture? I mean, some movies guys got to do this at some point, you know, because when it's that hot and the flames are going, and you know how the heat distorts the picture anyway, so you can kind of see in there and you look in there and say, but didn't we throw three in? There's not three anymore. There's four, and they're walking around. The fourth one doesn't even look like, it's distorted, doesn't even look like a man. There's something different about the fourth one that is there. See, here's the point of the story. It's in these times and in these struggles that people see Jesus with you, that people see God alive. They see something of who he is in your life. It's not during the times when you pray and say, "God, give me what I want," and God gives you what you want. And you get, you know, all the stuff that you want. You say, "See, isn't God blessing me?" People don't see God in that. They don't. I'm sorry, they don't. They just see that you're lucky, or you know you're good at what you do, or you know, "I don't understand. It's not fair that you got those things." But during the times where you are struggling, during the times where you are bound up and there is no rescue for you, during the times where, you know, everything seems to have come against you, but God becomes your rescuer, that's when people see him. That's when they look and they say, "Weren't there three? I see four. There's another one there." And these guys are now free. They are loose. Look at the next part of the story. It says, verse 26, "Then Nebuchadnezzar came as close as he could to the door of the flaming furnace, and he shouted, 'Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out. Come here.' So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stepped out of the fire," just out of the flames. They come walking out. "Then the king's officers, his officials, his governors, his advisors crowded around them, and they saw that the fire had not touched them. They had not been burned at all. In fact, look, it says not a hair on their heads was singed, and their clothing was not scorched." It says they didn't even smell like smoke. Is that incredible? Not even a smell of smoke. My son, when he was little, he loved to play in fire. I think all boys do, right? And the thing is, it was always a dead giveaway that he and his friends had gone somewhere and gotten near a fire or something, because when he came home, you know, it was a piece of cake. You're like, "Whoa, what have you all been doing? What have you been into?" You know, you immediately go and you're calling the news station. Is somebody's house burned down? You know, because you know. You guys, what have y'all been? I can smell the smoke. You can't hide it. There's no way to get around it. Plus, he would usually be covered in black soot. But you know, it's still, you could smell the smoke. Not with them. wasn't even a trace of what had happened. And look at the next verse. It says in verse 28, then Nebuchadnezzar said, praise to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He sent his angel to rescue his servants who trusted him. They defied the king's command and were willing to die rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make this decree. If any people, whatever their race or nation or language, speak a word against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they will be torn limb from limb, and their houses will be turned into heaps of rubble. There is no other God who can rescue like this. You know, when I read that, my first thought was to kind of laugh as if God needs Nebuchadnezzar to threaten people, right? What? Thanks, but, you know, no thanks. You didn't really catch it, did you, Nebuchadnezzar? This is because you defied me. I don't need you to do my work for me. I don't need you to do my bidding. I'm able to rescue my own. I've always been able to rescue my own. In fact, here's the thing that I think is so important that it's easy to miss not catching this. The fire that was intended to destroy them is actually, that means the trial, the circumstances, is actually the exact thing that God uses to set them free, to burn away the ropes that were binding them, that were holding them. See, that's what God does for you and I. We fret the struggles. We fret the things that God, he sets us up against because we think, God, how could you allow this to happen? How could you allow me to struggle in this way? Or how could you allow this to have a, you know, God, where are you? Why don't you give me the things that I want? And God all along is saying, why don't you trust me? Why don't you trust me? Even when you go through fiery troubles or trials in your life, difficult, why don't you trust me that there are times that I use those things actually to set you free? Listen, there's some people in here who could tell some stories like that. In fact, there's some people in here that, you know, maybe for the first time even now, you're realizing, you know what, I just went through a really difficult time. And God sent me through something, and I was lamenting it and feeling like, God, where are you? And I'm beginning to realize he was right there. I didn't go through those. God didn't take me through that to hold me back or bind me up or somehow to make me, you know, less capable. God actually took me through that so that I would learn to trust him in a way I've never trusted him before, to depend on him like I've never depended on him before. So that God could free me from the things that maybe because of fear or maybe because I think, you know, there's nothing I can do about this, right? But God can. And to set you into a different position, a different place in life where God uses your life so that someone else can see him. Not you, but so they can see him. Would you pray with me this morning? I don't know what you're facing or what you're going through, but of course God does. And maybe you're here and you've prayed for God to take something away and God to remove something. And maybe you've done the thing that we all tend to do. You've avoided the most difficult parts, the most difficult circumstances. Not recognizing that if you would put your hope and your trust in God and you would face those things, that God might even use those things to set you free, to build a trust, a spirit inside of you that puts your hope in him like you've never hoped in him before. It's not God's intention to destroy us or tear us down, but to draw us to himself. And because of our faith in him, to set us free. That's the message of the cross. Jesus goes to the cross. He takes our sin to the cross. Our sin is crucified. And then he walks out of the grave. Free from all those things so that we could be free, so that we could live a resurrected life. You never put your hope and your trust in God's freer, in God's rescuer. I know your situation may be difficult, but he has sent his son for that purpose. In Jesus' name we pray.